The year is 1305. William Wallace has been put to death in London, and his dismembered body sent back north of the border to be displayed as a warning. Edward I, content now that he has Scotland firmly in his grip, would have taken for granted among his court the young Robert de Bruce, the Earl of Carrick, 31 years of age, part English, part Scottish, part Norman, holding lands in England, and possessing by heredity at least a fair claim to the Scottish throne. He was a particular favourite of King Edward, but although at court in London, he had Scotland's crown on his mind, partly as a result of his own ambition and partly the result of negotiations with his main opponent in the claim to the Scottish throne, a man named John Cummin, sometimes called the Red Cummin. Now, it seems King Edward began to grow suspicious, and Bruce, privately forewarned, secretly rode north for a meeting with his rival. However, this was no act of patriotism. Whatever Robert Bruce was to become in later life, it's pretty clear that at this stage he was very much ruled by ambitions of personal power. As arranged, they met in the Franciscan church at Dumfries. No one knows exactly what happened in there, except that an argument occurred, and Bruce stabbed Cummin, who died. Whether any of Bruce's supporters went in to finish him off is not quite clear, but we can imagine the scene, with Robert Bruce coming out of the church and realizing immediately what he'd done. But Cummin had the support of half the ruling families of Scotland. Also, by murdering him in a sacred place, he had committed the sin and the crime of sacrilege. At one blow, he had made enemies of half the country, and by his act of sacrilege, had made himself an outlaw. Now, I wonder what you or I would have done under those circumstances. What he did was to talk the matter over with his younger brother, Edward Bruce, a rather impetuous young man. But he took his brother's advice, went quickly to Scone Abbey, and there, in a hasty ceremony, had himself crowned King of Scotland. What a fantastic defiance of destiny. Now, Edward I, when he heard this news, was furious and derisive. He nicknamed Robert Bruce King Hob, and he determined that King Hob should be crushed. So here we have Robert Bruce, a rather dubious character filled with personal ambition. His act of sacrilege presented a dilemma. He could either flee, disgraced into exile, or fight for respectability as a patriotic leader. Well, having chosen the quest for power, he then launched into his self-appointed dual task of uniting and freeing Scotland. His character over the years, through personal suffering and endeavor, simplified, and he became a dedicated man. For the next 8 years, until 1314, Robert Bruce campaigned in two main ways. First, using guerrilla warfare against the occupying English. And he got his ideas from the successful exploits of William Wallace before him. And secondly, by more open conflict against the Scottish nobles who opposed him. And overall, he was successful. He had his setbacks, of course, several of them. And indeed, it's after a defeat or a series of them that the story of Robert Bruce and the spider occurs. It appears that he was hiding in a cave, wondering whether it was all worth it, wondering whether he should carry on. And it said that he saw this spider, this tiny creature, trying over and over to complete its web. And its sheer persistence is said to have inspired him to renew his own perseverance in the cause of Scotland. Whether in fact this happened or not is unclear. It's a legend. A rather nice legend. But generally speaking, over the years, his campaigns were successful. Edward II succeeded his father in 1307, but was less of a warrior king. So Robert Bruce was able to bring his war against the English more into the open. And by the year 1312, there were only a few Scottish castles left in English hands, and of these, by far the most important was Stirling. Also, by this date, 1312, Bruce had either beaten his Scottish opponents or won them over to his side. He had certainly won the hearts of the people. He discovered himself to be a born leader. He was successful, which was important, of course, and brave. His personal heroism was well known. In 1313, he gave to his younger brother, Edward, the task of taking Stirling Castle. And so the Scots lay siege to that fortress. But for Edward Bruce, this wasn't his style of warfare at all. Hanging around for months, maybe years, trying to starve a garrison into submission. And so he came to an agreement with the governor of the castle, according to the laws of chivalry in those days. He came to an agreement that if the English had not relieved Stirling by Midsummer's Day of the following year, 1314, then it would be handed over to the Scots. Now, when Robert Bruce heard this, he was horrified, because he realized the issue was far too important for the English king to allow that to happen. It was going to force Edward II's hand. He would have to act, and act with all his strength. He must come northwards with such a force of arms as to make victory against the Scots beyond any doubt. But the more he thought it over, the more Robert Bruce approved. Until finally he declared that he would accept his hour of destiny the following midsummer, whatever it might be. And so, during the months of winter and spring, Bruce prepared his men for the battle to come. A battle that would decide the fate of Scotland and of himself as king. And sure enough, in June of 1314, Edward II came northwards. He came at the head of a force of 20,000 men, consisting of a huge mass of cavalry, another large body of archers, the famed long bowmen of England, and spearmen on foot. The Scots numbered less than 6,000, and clearly stood no chance whatsoever in any normal battle arrangement. And so Bruce allowed the English king and his army to come onward into Scotland, unhindered, almost reaching Stirling itself, and then met him just 2 miles short at a place called Bannockburn. And what happened there, we'll tell you next time.